All right, this is chapter 9 of Jonathan Edwards' Charity and Its Fruits. The chapter is called The Spirit of Charity, the Opposite of an Angry or Wrathful Spirit. Charity is not easily provoked. 1 Corinthians 13:5. Having declared that charity is contrary to the two great cardinal vices of pride and selfishness, those deep and ever-flowing fountains of sin and wickedness in the heart, the apostle next proceeds to show that it is also contrary to two things that are commonly the fruits of this pride and selfishness, an angry spirit and a censorious spirit. To the first of these points, I would now turn your attention. Excuse me. Doctrine. The spirit of charity or Christian love is the opposite of an angry or wrathful spirit or disposition. In speaking to this doctrine, I would inquire first in what consists that angry spirit or temper to which a Christian spirit is contrary, and then give the reason why a Christian spirit is contrary to it. Number one. What is that angry or wrathful spirit to which charity, or a Christian spirit, is contrary? It is not all manner of anger that Christianity is opposite and contrary to. It is said in Ephesians 4, verse 26, "Be ye angry and sin not," which seems to suppose that there is such a thing as anger without sin, or that it is possible to be angry in some cases and yet not offend God. And therefore it may be answered in a single word that a Christian spirit, or the spirit of charity, is opposite to all undue and unsuitable anger. But anger may be undue or unsuitable in four respects: in its nature, its occasion, its end, and its measure. Anger may be undue and unsuitable in respect to its nature. Anger may be defined as an earnest or and more or less violent opposition of spirit against any real or supposed evil, or in view of any fault or offense of another. All anger is opposition of the mind against real or supposed evil, but it is not all opposition of the mind against evil that is properly called anger. There is an opposition of the judgment that is not anger, for anger is the opposition not of the cool judgment, but of the spirit of the man, that is, of his disposition or heart. But here, again, it is not all opposition of the spirit against evil that can be called anger. There is an opposition of the spirit against natural evil that we allow, as in grief and sorrow, for instance, which is a very different thing from anger. And in distinction from this, anger is opposition to moral evil, or real or supposed evil, in voluntary agents, or at least in agents that are conceived to be voluntary, or acting by their own will, and against such evil as is supposed to be their fault. But again, it is not all opposition of spirit against evil or faultiness in voluntary agents that is anger. For there may be a dislike without the spirit being excited and angry, and such dislike is an opposition of the will and judgment, and not always of the feeling, and in order for there to be anger, the latter must be moved. In all anger, there must be earnestness and opposition of feeling, and the spirit must be moved and stirred within us. Anger is one of the passions or affections of the soul, though when called an affection, it is for the most part to be regarded as an evil affection. Such being the nature of anger in general, it may now be shown wherein anger is undue or suitable in, or unsuitable in its nature. And this is the case with all anger that contains ill will or a desire for revenge. Some have defined anger to be a desire for revenge, but this cannot be considered a just definition of anger in general, for, if so, there would be no anger that would not imply ill will and the desire that some other might be injured. But doubtless, there is such a thing as anger that is consistent with goodwill. For a father may be angry with his child, that is, he may find in himself an earnestness and opposition of spirit to the bad conduct of his child. His spirit may be enraged and stirred in opposition to that conduct and to his child while continuing in it. And yet, at the same time, he will not have any proper ill will to the child, but on the contrary, a real goodwill. And so far from desiring its injury, he may have the very highest desire for its true welfare, and his very anger is but his opposition to that which he thinks will be of injury to it. This shows that anger, in its general nature, rather consists in the opposition of the spirit to evil than in a desire of revenge. If the nature of anger in general consisted in ill will and a desire for revenge, no anger would be lawful in any case whatever. For we are not allowed to entertain ill will toward others in any case, but are to have good will to all. We are required by Christ to wish well to and pray for the prosperity of all, even our enemies, and those who despitefully use us and persecute us. Matthew 5, verse 44. The rule given by the apostle is, bless them which persecute you, bless and curse not. Romans 12, verse 14. That is, we are only to wish good and pray for good to others, and in no case to wish evil. So all revenge is forbidden, except the vengeance that public justice takes on the transgressor inflicting. But in this case, men do not act for themselves, but for God. The rule is, thou shalt not avenge, nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. Leviticus 19, verse 18. And the apostle says, dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Romans 12, verse 19. Excuse me. So all the anger that contains ill will or a desire of revenge is what Christianity is contrary to and forbids by the most fearful sanctions. Sometimes anger, as it is spoken of in the Scripture, is meant only in the worst sense, or in that sense of it that implies ill will and the desire for revenge, and in this sense all anger is forbidden, as in Ephesians 4, verse 31, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And Colossians 3, verse 8, but now ye also put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Thus anger may be irregular and sinful with respect to its nature. Anger may be unsuitable and unchristian in respect to its occasion, and such unsuitableness consists in its being without any just cause. Of this Christ speaks when he says, whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. Matthew 5, verse 22. And this may be the case in three ways. First, when the occasion of anger is that which is no fault at all in the person who is its object. This is not infrequently the case. Many persons are of such a proud and peevish disposition that they will be angry at anything that is in any respect against them, troublesome to them, or contrary to their wishes, whether anybody is to blame for it or not. So sometimes men are angry with others for those things that are not their fault, but that happen merely through their involuntary ignorance or through their impotence. They are angry that they have not done better when the only cause was that the circumstances were such that they could not do otherwise than they did. Oftentimes, persons are angry with others not only for that which is no fault in them, but for that which is really good and for which they ought to be praised. So it always is when men are angry at God and fret at his providence and its dispositions toward them. Thus, to be fretful and impatient and to murmur against God's dealings is a most horribly wicked kind of anger. And yet this very often is the case in this wicked world. This is what the wicked Israelites were so often guilty of, and for which so many of them were overthrown in the wilderness. This was what Jonah, though a good man, was guilty of when he was angry with God without a cause, angry for that for which he should have praised God, his great mercy to the Ninevites. Oftentimes also, persons' spirits are kept very much in a fret by reason of things going contrary to them, and their meeting with crosses, disappointments, and entanglements in their business, when they will not own that it is God they fret at and are angry with, and do not even seem to be convinced of it themselves. But indeed, such fretfulness can be interpreted no other way, and whatever they may pretend, it is ultimately aimed against the author of providence, against the God who orders these cross events, so that it is murmuring and fretting against him. It is a common thing for persons to be angry with others for their doing well and that which is only their duty. There never was so much bitterness and fierceness of anger among men one to another, and so much hostility and malice for any one thing as there has been for well-doing. History gives no accounts of any such cruelties as those practiced towards God's people on account of their profession and practice of religion. How annoyed were the scribes and Pharisees with Christ for doing the will of his Father in what he did and said while on earth? When men are angry with others, or with civil or ecclesiastical authorities, for proceeding regularly against them for their errors or sins, they are angry with them for well-doing. And this is the case when they are angry with their neighbors or brethren in the church for bearing a due testimony against them and endeavoring to bring them to justice when the case requires it. Often men are angry with others not only for well-doing, but for doing those things that are acts of friendship to them, as when we are angry with others for administering Christian reproof for anything they observe in us that is wrong. This the psalmist said he should accept as a kindness. Let the righteous smite me, it shall be a kindness. But such as are angry with it foolishly and sinfully take it as an injury. In all these things, our anger is undue and unreasonable with regard to its occasion, when that occasion is no fault of the one with whom we are angry. Second, anger is unsuitable and unchristian as to its occasion when persons are angry upon small and trivial occasions, and when, though there is something of blame, yet the fault is very small, and such as is not worth our being stirred and enraged about, or engaged about. God does not call us to have our spirits ceaselessly engaged in opposition and stirred up in anger unless it is on some important occasions. He who is angry at every little fault he may see in others is certainly one with whom it is otherwise than is expressed in the text. Of him who is provoked at every little trifling thing, it surely cannot be said that he is not easily provoked. Some are of such an angry, fretful spirit that they are put out of humor by every little thing, and by things in others, in the family, in society, or in business, that are no greater faults than they themselves are guilty of every day. Those who will thus be angry at every fault they see in others will be sure to be always kept in a fret, and their minds will never be composed, for it cannot be expected in this world but that we shall continually be seeing faults in others as there are continually faults in ourselves. And therefore, it is that Christians are directed to be slow to speak, slow to wrath, in James 1, verse 19. And it is said that he that is soon angry dealeth foolishly. He who diligently guards his own spirit will not be very frequently or easily angry. He wisely keeps his mind in a calm, clear frame and does not suffer it to be stirred with anger, except on extraordinary occasions and those that especially call for it. Third, anger may be unsuitable and unchristian in its occasion, when our spirits are stirred at the faults of others, chiefly as they affect ourselves, and not as they are against God. We should never be angry but at sin, and this should always be that which we oppose in our anger. When our spirits are stirred to oppose this evil, it should be as sin, or chiefly as it is against God. If there is no sin and no fault, then we have no cause to be angry. And if there is a fault or sin, then it is infinitely worse as against God than it is as against us. Therefore, it requires the most opposition on that account. Persons sin in their anger when they are selfish in it, for we are not to act as if we were our own, or for ourselves simply, since we belong to God and not to ourselves. When a fault is committed wherein God is sinned against, and persons are injured by it, they should be chiefly concerned, and their spirits chiefly moved against it, because it is against God. For they should be more solicitous for God's honor than for their own temporal interests. All anger, as to occasion, is either a virtue or a vice, for there is no middle sort that is neither good nor bad. But there is no virtue or goodness in opposing sin unless it is opposed as sin. The anger that is virtuous is the same thing that, in one form, is called zeal. Our anger should be like Christ's anger. He was like a lamb under the greatest personal injuries, and we never read of his being angry but in the cause of God against sin as sin. This should be the case with us. And as anger may, in these three ways, be unsuitable and unchristian with respect to the occasion or cause of it, so it may be undue and sinful with respect to its end. And this in two particulars. First, when we are angry without considerately proposing any end to be gained by it. In this way, anger is rash and inconsiderate in that it is suffered to rise and be continued without any consideration or motive. Reason has no hand in the matter, but the passions go before the reason, and anger is suffered to rise before even a thought has been given to the question. Of what advantage or benefit will it be, either to me or others? Such anger is not the anger of men, but the blind passion of beasts. It is a kind of beastly fury rather than the affection of a rational creature. All things in the soul of man should be under the government of reason, which is the highest faculty of our being. And every other faculty and principle in the soul should be governed and directed by that to its proper end. And therefore, when our anger is of this kind, it is unchristian and sinful. And so it is, second, when we allow ourselves to be angry for any wrong end. Though reason would tell us, with regard to our anger, that it cannot be for the glory of God or of any real benefit to ourselves, but on the other hand, much to the mischief of ourselves or others, yet, because we have in view the gratification of our own pride, the extension of our influence, or getting in some way superiority to others, we allow anger as aiding to gain these or other ends, and thus indulge a sinful spirit. Fourth, anger may be unsuitable and unchristian with respect to its measure, and this in two particulars, as to the measure of its degree and the measure of its continuance. First, when it is immoderate in degree. Anger may be far beyond what the case requires, and often it is so great as to put persons beyond the control of themselves, their passions being so violent that, for the time, they do not know what they do, and seem to be unable to direct and regulate either their feelings or conduct. Sometimes men's passions rise so high that they are, as it were, drunk with them, so that their reason is gone and they act as if beside themselves. But the degree of anger ought always to be regulated by the end of it, and it should never be suffered to rise any higher than so far as tends to the obtaining of the good ends which reason has proposed. Anger is also beyond measure, and thus sinful, second, when it is immoderate in its continuance. It is a very sinful thing for persons to be angry long. The wise man not only gives us the injunction, "Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry," but he adds that anger resteth in the bosom of fools, Ecclesiastes 7, verse 9. And the apostle says, "Be ye angry and sin not, let not the sun go down upon your wrath," Ephesians 4, verse 26. If anger is long continued, it soon degenerates into malice, for the leaven of evil spreads faster than the leaven of good. If a person allows himself to hold anger long toward another, he will quickly come to hate him. So we find that it actually is so among those who retain a grudge in their hearts against others for week after week, month after month, and year after year. In the end, they truly hate the persons against whom they thus lay up anger, whether they own it or not. And this is a most dreadful sin in the sight of God, and therefore should be exceedingly careful how they suffer anger to continue long in their hearts. Number two, having thus shown what is that angry or wrathful spirit to which charity or a Christian spirit is contrary, I pass, as proposed, to show how charity or a Christian spirit is contrary to it. This I would do by showing first that charity or love, which is the sum of the Christian spirit, is directly and in itself contrary to the anger that is sinful, and second, that the fruits of charity that are mentioned in the context are all contrary to it. Christian charity or love is directly and in itself contrary to all undue anger. Christian love is contrary to anger that is undue in its nature and that tends to revenge and so implies ill will, for the nature of love is goodwill. It tends to prevent persons from being angry without just cause and will be far from disposing anyone to be angry for little faults. Love is backward to anger and will not yield to it on trivial occasions, much less where there is no cause for being angry. It is a malignant and evil and not a loving spirit that disposes persons to be angry without cause. Love for God is the opposite of a disposition in men to be angry at others' faults, chiefly as they themselves are offended and injured by them. It rather disposes them to look at them chiefly as committed against God. If love is an exercise, it will tend to keep down the irascible passions and hold them in subjection so that reason and the spirit of love may regulate them and keep them from being immoderate in degree or of long continuance. And not only is charity or Christian love directly and in itself contrary to all undue anger, but all the fruits of this charity that are mentioned in the context are also contrary to it. I shall mention only two of these fruits, as they may stand for all those virtues that are contrary to pride and selfishness. First, love or charity is contrary to all undue and sinful anger, as, in its fruits, it is contrary to pride. Pride is one chief cause of undue anger. It is because men are proud and exalt themselves in their own hearts that they are vengeful and are apt to be excited and make great things out of little ones that may be against themselves. Yea, they even treat as vices things that are in themselves virtues when they think their honor is touched or when their will is crossed. It is pride that makes men so unreasonable and rash in their anger, and raises it to such a high degree, and continues it so long, and often keeps it up in the form of habitual malice. But as we have already seen, love, or Christian charity, is utterly opposed to pride. Second, love or charity is contrary to all sinful anger, as in its fruits, it is contrary to selfishness. It is because men are selfish and seek their own that they are malicious and vengeful against all who oppose or interfere with their interests. If men did not chiefly seek their own private, selfish interests, but the glory of God and the common good, then their spirit would be a great deal more stirred up in God's cause than in their own, and they would not be prone to hasty, rash, inconsiderate, immoderate, and long-continued wrath with any who might have injured or provoked them, but they would be in a great measure, forget themselves for God's sake and for their zeal, and from their zeal for the honor of Christ. The end they would aim at would not be making themselves great or getting their own will, but the glory of God and the good of their fellow beings. But love, as we have seen, is opposed to all selfishness. Application. Use of examination. Our own consciences, if faithfully searched and imperatively inquired of, can best tell us whether we are or have been persons of such an angry spirit and wrathful disposition as has been described, whether we are frequently angry, indulge in ill will, or allow the continuance of anger. Have we not often been angry? And if so, is there not reason to think that that anger has been undue and without just cause, and thus sinful? God does not call Christians into his kingdom so that they may indulge greatly in fretfulness and have their minds commonly stirred up and ruffled with anger. And has not most of the anger you have cherished been chiefly, if not entirely, on your own account? Men are often wont to plead zeal for religion, for duty, and for the honor of God as the cause of their indignation, when it is only their own private interest that is concerned and affected. It is remarkable how forward men are to appear as if they were zealous for God and righteousness in cases wherein their honor, will, or interest has been touched, and to make pretense of this in injuring others or complaining of them. And what a great difference there is in their conduct in other cases wherein God's honor is as much or a great deal more hurt, and their own interest is not specially concerned. In the latter case, there is no such appearance of zeal or engagedness of spirit, and no forwardness to reprove or complain and be angry, but often a readiness to excuse and leave reproof to others, and to be cold and backward in anything like opposition to the sin. Ask yourself still further what good has been obtained by your anger, and what have you aimed at in it? Have you even thought of these things? There has been a great deal of anger and bitterness in things passing in this town on public occasions, and many of you have been present on such occasions, and such anger has been manifest in your conduct, and I fear, rested in your bosoms. Examine yourselves as to the matter, and ask what has been the nature of your anger. Has not most, if not all of it, been of that undue and unchristian kind that has been spoken of? Has it not been of the nature of ill will, malice, and bitterness of heart, and anger arising from proud and selfish principles because your interest, your opinion, or your party was touched? Has not your anger been far from that Christian zeal that does not disturb charity, embitter the feelings, or lead to unkindness or revenge in the conduct? And how has it been with respect to your holding anger? Has not the sun more than once gone down upon your wrath, while God and your neighbor knew it? Nay, has it not gone down again and again, through month after month and year after year, while winter's cold has not chilled the heat of your wrath, and the summer sun has not melted you to kindness? Are there not some here present who are sitting before God with anger laid up in their hearts and burning there? Or if their anger is for a time concealed from human eyes, is it not like an old sore, not thoroughly healed, but so that the least touch renews the smart? Or is it not like a smothered fire in the heaps of autumn leaves, that the least breeze will kindle into a flame? How is it in your families? Families are the most closely united societies of all. Their members are in the nearest relation and under the greatest obligations to peace, harmony, and love. And what has been your spirit in the family? Many a time have you not been fretful, angry, impatient, peevish, and unkind to those whom God has made in so great a measure dependent on you, and who are so easily made happy or unhappy by what you do or say, by your kindness or unkindness? And what kind of anger have you indulged in your family, in the family? Indulged in the family? Has it not often been unreasonable and sinful, not only in its nature, but in its occasions, where those with whom you were angry were not at fault, or when the fault was trifling or unintended, or where perhaps you were yourself partly to blame for it? And even where there might have been just cause, has not your wrath been continued and led you to be sullen or severe to an extent that your own conscience disapproved? Have you not been angry with your neighbors who live by you and with whom you have to do daily? On trifling occasions and for little things, have you not allowed yourself in anger toward them? In all these points, it becomes us to examine ourselves and to know what manner of spirit we are of and wherein we come short of the Spirit of Christ. Excuse me. Use of warning. Excuse me, sorry. The doctrine dissuades from and warns against all undue and sinful anger. The heart of man is exceedingly prone to undue and sinful anger, being naturally full of pride and selfishness. And we live in a world that is full of occasions that tend to stir up this corruption that is within us, so that we cannot expect to live in any tolerable measure as Christians would do in this respect without constant watchfulness and prayer. We should not only watch against the exercises, but fight against the principle of anger and seek earnestly to have that mortified in our hearts by the establishment and increase of the spirit of divine love and humility in our souls. And to this end, several things may be considered. First, consider frequently your own failings by which you have given both God and man occasion to be displeased with you. All your lifetime you have come short of God's requirements and thus justly incurred his dreadful wrath. You have constant occasions to pray to God that he will not be angry with you, but will show you mercy. Your failings have also been numerous toward your fellow men and have often given them occasion to be angry with you. Your faults are as great, perhaps, as theirs, and this thought should lead you not to spend so much of your time in fretting at the motes in their eyes, but rather to occupy it in pulling the beams out of your own. Very often those who are most ready to be angry with others and carry their resentments highest for their faults are equally or still more guilty of the same faults. So those who are most apt to be angry with others for speaking evil of them are often most frequent in speaking evil of others, and even in their anger to vilify and abuse them. If others then provoke us, instead of being angry with them, let our first thoughts be turned to ourselves. Let it put us on self-reflection and lead us to inquire whether we have not been guilty of the very same things that excite our anger, or even worse. Thus, thinking of our own failings and errors should tend to keep us from undue anger with others. Second, consider also how such undue anger destroys the comfort of him who indulges it. It troubles the soul in which it is as a storm troubles the ocean. It troubles the soul in which it is, as a storm troubles the ocean. Such anger is inconsistent with a man's enjoying himself or having any true peace or self-respect in his own spirit. Men of an angry and wrathful temper, whose minds are always in a fret, are the most miserable sort of men and live a most miserable life. So a regard to our own happiness should lead us to shun all undue and sinful anger. Third, consider how much such a spirit unfits persons for the duties of religion. All undue anger disposes us for the pious exercises and the active duties of religion. It puts the soul far from that sweet and excellent frame of spirit in which we most enjoy communion with God, and that makes truth and ordinances most profitable to us. Hence it is that God commands us not to approach his altars while we are at enmity with others, but first to be reconciled to our brother, and then come and offer our gift. Matthew 5, verse 24. The apostle says, I will therefore that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands, without wrath and doubting. 1 Timothy 2, verse 8. Fourth, consider that angry men are spoken of in the Bible as unfit for human society. The express direction of God is, make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways, and get a snare to thy soul. Proverbs 22, verses 24 to 25. Such a man is accursed as a pest of society who disturbs and disquiets it, and puts everything into confusion. An angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgression. Proverbs 29, verse 22. Everyone is uncomfortable about him, his example is evil, and his conduct disapproved alike by God and men. Let these considerations then prevail with all, and lead them to avoid an angry spirit and temper, and to cultivate the spirit of gentleness, kindness, and love, which is the spirit of heaven. Amen.